Afternoons on the Horn with Chad Hastings and Kevin Dunn.
You guys both look like you might want to hit me in the face.
On the Horn, 104.9 AM 1260 and hornfm.com with the Longhorns Play and Austin Talks Sports.
Afternoon delight.
How about hour number three on a Wednesday? Hope you're having a good one. Trey Elling is here. I'm Chad Hastings. Kevin Dunn sitting right over there. And we are headed to the Vaqueros Cafe and Cantina Hotline to talk more football, more Texas football specifically, with Ian Boyd of Inside Texas, also the author of Flyover Football. Check that out wherever you get your books. He's at Ian_A_Boyd on Twitter as well. Ian, how you doing?
I've been cleaning up toddler bath toys, and I just sprayed myself with a bunch of old water and a rubber ducky.
Oh, so you're smelling good right now. That's what you're saying.
I'm coming into this. Yeah.
So you feel like a Texas linebacker trying to deal with Jay. Well, you, I mean, I feel like a segue was right there.
Yeah.
All right, so Ian, we've talked a lot about the Texas linebacker usage in the Oklahoma game, and then just the seeming, you know, the lack of spies in most situations where Jalen Hurts was running. In going back and going over it, give me your thoughts on it, but also, have you found an explanation for it? Have you found some kind of logic to explain it?
Well, it's interesting that Tom and Herman felt that the defensive game plan needed to be explained in the post-game press conferences. So he was explaining what they were doing and why, because I think he was aware that it went pretty awry. What they were trying to do was to play match coverage on all of Oklahoma's receivers so that Jalen Hurts wouldn't get any free hitters where a receiver or a tight end or a running back is running free down the field on a play action or an RPO, and then they just pile up points really quickly and easily because guys are running free. Now, the problem is that the way Texas tried to stop that was by having their linebackers stick on their man if they ran out on routes. And that didn't leave very many people behind to corral Jalen Hurts. And it didn't leave linebackers to do the sorts of things that you'd normally ask linebackers to do, like contain the quarterback in the pocket, spy him, track him in the open field between the hash marks, things like that. So that was sort of what was going on there.
What is the adjustment with the four eye? I mean, we hear that a lot, and from what I know, I mean, that pretty much means that that technique is lining up on the inside eye of the tackle. And so we've talked about how between the tackles, Texas has been pretty good. But once teams get the edge and get the perimeter, Texas is in trouble. How much of that is the formation and the scheme they're running, and how much of that may be personnel?
I think maybe part of it is the fact that they don't run the same scheme week to week.
Okay.
They have they've been changing up their personnel packages, sometimes by necessity because some of the guys have been getting hurt, but also because it seems like Orlando tries to throw something new at the wall every week. Like there were things about the Oklahoma defensive game plan that made sense in theory, but then you ask, how is this team going to execute it when they've never run that style from this package before? And you would hear things in the fall camp that the defense was in a different look every other practice. So some of it is there are difficulties in containing the edge using the four eye techniques, but there are also workarounds, and we haven't seen consistent execution of any workarounds because Texas is a been doing so much, cycling so many different players and schemes out there behind it, that they have just not been good at executing the fundamentals of containment. And they have made some adjustments. You'll see Malcolm Roach often lines up in a five technique this year instead of a four eye, which is how Iowa State plays this defense. And really, they could fix this if they just if they played Roach on one end as a five, and then they had Osai on the edge of the other side playing the edge pretty aggressively. They could really tamper down some of the problems they've been having, but they have to play something consistent.
What were some of those things you were talking about that Orlando threw out there that surprised you that they were running that?
Well, the single high, so they were playing single high sort of matchup zone that basically becomes man coverage from the 3-3-5 with Osai as a sort of pseudo nickel. And I did not expect them to play man coverage against Oklahoma because Texas's corners have been so iffy this year and Oklahoma's receivers have been so good. But Orlando's bet seemed to be, hey, it doesn't matter if Oklahoma's receivers are really good. If they are not wide open, then Jalen Hurts won't hit them. And they won't be wide open if we play man coverage. And that ended up being actually mostly right, I would say, other than, CeeDee Lamb breaking free a couple times, sometimes on roll motions and sweeps and not just pure coverage. So that made sense that they did that, and you understand what they were going for. It's just that, patch one hole and another emerges, and this team doesn't have the consistency and the understanding of the defense well enough to adjust.
Talking with Ian Boyd inside Texas, and of course the book is Flyover Football. Ian, on the offensive side, you get to the half and you only have 3 points. You end up with 27. I think we all know in our guts that wasn't going to be enough to win this game. What'd you see on offense?
Yeah, I think that was really the most disturbing dimension to this game. The defense did not play super well, but I don't think anyone was shocked that Lincoln Riley was able to take down Todd Orlando once again. But the failures on offense were much more concerning. And the two things that really caught my eye on the negative side here were that one of the big things they brought into this game as a way to attack Oklahoma, one of their big tricks up their sleeves, was this sort of 21 personnel package look that they opened the game with, where they had Brewer as a tight end to one side. They had Duvernay and the running back, both in the backfield as running backs, and then Eagles and Colin Johnson split out wide. And then they would, the vast majority of the time they lined up in that, they would send Duvernay out on a quick swing to the perimeter. So it's like, I wonder what they're doing here. And it was an option, it's like throw the swing if they chase it, if they don't chase it, if they do chase it, hand off. But, I mean, Oklahoma knew coming into this game that Texas was going to be trying to pick on them on the perimeter because Radley Hiles had been so iffy out there at nickel. So if you know that Oklahoma knows that you're going to do that, you cannot be so predictable with it. I think they tried to catch him like maybe they'll be prepared for our bubble screen game from our normal D offense, but will they be prepared for it if we get into this new formation? Well, yes, if you make it that obvious, then yes, they will be ready. And there were other problems with that formation where Colin Johnson was missing blocks in the slot. There's no surprise. The dude never plays slot, and he hasn't played in like 5 weeks. Brewer missed a couple of things at tight end, inline tight end. Well, he doesn't play there all that often. That whole thing was just a big mess. Then the other big concern was just how badly they handled Oklahoma's pressure packages. Mm. I mean, that was obvious to everyone watching the game, was just that they were not blocking Kenneth Murray. They were not blocking Oklahoma's pressure looks. And a lot of them, as Tom Herman admitted after the game, it wasn't anything that Oklahoma hadn't already shown on film. So you just wonder, what were the offensive linemen doing this week? How were they caught, with their pants down so badly by some of these looks? And that really thwarted what Texas wanted to do. They played four plays the entire game in the empty formations, and the empty formations are why Texas was number one or number two in the country in third down conversion. They'd get five wide receivers out, and then Sam Ellinger could find the open guy and hit slants all day. And then they could not execute that very consistently early because they couldn't block Oklahoma's pressure. And then they gave up on it and spent the rest of the game in a four wide with the tight end flexed out so that the running backs could help in protection. It was ugly. It was an ugly game.
Yeah, and even that protection was ugly at times from the running backs and obviously from the offensive line. No, yeah, you know what I mean, Ian? I mean, they make that adjustment, and those guys couldn't pick stuff up. I might as well go empty and see if you can't beat them to the punch.
Yeah. I didn't love that adjustment live. I imagine that Ellinger's reported argument with Ingram on the sideline related to Ellinger's frustration with how the running backs are treating protection. There were a lot of plays where you'd see the running back swing out and get picked up, and then a blitz would come that they had obviously not seen. Like Ellinger got nailed on a safety blitz, and you're like, where was the running back on that one?
Yeah, it's a good question. So when you look at the offensive line, though, and their protection, and you've really looked at it a lot with a pretty eagle eye, is that something – how much of that do you put on Shackelford cannot match up with a Gallimore and it was just talent beating the other talent, or how much of that do you kind of get on Herman, Hand, and the offensive staff for the way they set that up?
From some of the things I've heard, I get the sense that maybe Shackelford and the offensive line didn't give this game as much attention as they should have.
What?
And I don't know. They did not look very prepared for this one. I think that Ellinger's frustration on the sidelines with the running back and the offensive line were related to his frustrations that they were not picking up some of those things. Oklahoma has good players. I think maybe Texas underestimated them a little bit. I mean, there were quotes from Cosme. Cosme played a good game, but right. We had quotes before the game like, we're not too worried about Neville Gallimore. It's like, well, maybe you're not, but you don't have to block him. Shackelford does.
That's true. It's not your match.
Yeah.
Good point.
So I don't know. They ended up doing better in the second half, obviously. Maybe some of that also was Oklahoma getting tired from running Ellinger into the dirt so much. It would have been nice to see them adjust quicker and better. And I don't know where exactly the blame goes on that. You could probably spread some of it around to Herman, some of it around to the 15-man offensive staff, some of it to the players.
Talking with Ian Boyd of Inside Texas. Also, we mentioned he's the author of Flyover Football. Ian, in that book, you take a look at the Big 12 and the styles of offense that are, that are pervasive around the conference right now. But you also look into defenses. Talk to me about the next six opponents for Texas. Is there one or two that really jump out to you now that you saw that performance against OU? Anybody particularly worry you going up against the Texas offense because of the way that they scheme?
I wouldn't have been worried about any defense in the Big 12 the way the offense had been playing leading up to this game. I wouldn't have thought anybody could really match up. Now the question becomes, was Oklahoma's ability to scheme pressure something that will not happen again? Will Texas pick up on that and not allow, A-gap pressure from a full-steam linebacker again, or will that continue to be an issue? That's kind of the big question. If they continue to struggle with twists and loops and communication between Shackelford and Engelau, then there are other teams that can hit them with some stuff. Iowa State has a lot of blitzes they can throw there. Their inside linebacker already has like six sacks this year or something like that. They have a lot of ways to shoot him through the interior gaps in places where he's not expected. TCU has always been good at that kind of thing. Baylor has maybe the best defensive lineman in the conference and James Lynch. They've been playing pretty good defense. And Texas plays, I believe they play TCU, Iowa State, and Baylor all on the road. Is that right?
TCU,
I believe that is.
Iowa State, and Baylor.
Right.
Yeah. I think you're right.
Those are the three toughest defenses that they have left. Those are the three games that are probably going to shape up the Big 12 title race. And all three of those teams will be able to glean from the Oklahoma film some ways to attack the offensive line. So if it's just a matter of they got caught and they will adjust, then Texas should be fine. They should be able to score lots of points for the rest of the year. If there are some issues there that relate to personnel or just whatever else, struggles in the scheme or something, then this could be something that bites Texas really badly again.
Almost. You're almost right, Ian. It's K-State's in the middle. It's TCU, K-State, Iowa State, Baylor. Yeah.
Yeah, but they get all those three good ones on the road, right?
Yes, you're right. All those three, yeah. TCU, Iowa State, and Baylor are on the road. Yeah, correct.
Yep.
Oh, Ian, outside of the GD swing pass, and I mean that in two ways, and the bad blocking, were there any pass concepts that you saw that either would have worked or made sense going up against what we thought was going to be a pretty, not depleted secondary, just not a very good one?
You know, a lot of what they did worked. They hit some of the, I wish they had spent more time in just the base offense rather than the 21 stuff. They hit some of the RPO slants and skinny post stuff that's in the base offense. They hit one to Duvernay. They hit one or two to Colin Johnson. They got a couple of defensive pass interferences throwing RPOs to Colin Johnson. And then they hit another one that he dropped that everyone probably remembers that looked like it was going to be a, you know, a 50-yard gain or something. And they also hit some play action, like Oklahoma played pretty aggressive coverage. They hit Jake Smith on a slot fade. I think the ball bounced off his face or something.
Yep.
They hit Brennan Eagles in the hands once or twice on some play action deep shots, and he dropped them. I mean, I don't – a lot of the base offense was there to be had, and they were not connecting because I think probably because they got out to such a slow start and they were – pressing and feeling pressured by the circumstances, just kind of got away from them.
Pressured,
but that was working. Yeah. It would have been nice to see them try to get back to the empty if they could figure out a way to shore up the inside protection against the things that Oklahoma was doing. It would have been nice to see if they could have hit Duvernay on some slants and find him some matchups from empty, but they gave up on that, so.
It was something.
Yeah.
Ian Boyd, Inside.
I'm feeling a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
From Oklahoma, too.
Check out Inside Texas. Check out the book Flyover Football. He's at Ian_A_Boyd on Twitter. And apparently, he smells great right now. Ian, we appreciate the time with all that going on, man. Thank you so much.
Hey, you bet. Thanks for having me.
Thanks,
good
Ian.
Good stuff. Dealing with kids' toys and baths. Whew. And stuff. Always smells good. Thanks to Ian for his time. Ian said something that's absolutely terrifying. We'll let that marinate for a second while Kevin tells you about Apple Leasing, and then we'll come back.
Yeah, this isn't terrifying. This is good news for you. It can save you money, and you can really set up the way you want your lease to be. And that's why Apple Leasing's been around. One of the many reasons they've been around for 30-plus years. You can drive that new car, drive it for less, drive anything you want, any make, any model. That's one of the great things about Apple Leasing. Leasing is that you take that free lease quote and kind of see where you stand. A lot of people have just done it for S&Gs, kind of see where you are in the market. And then at that point, especially if you start with price, you know, okay, well, we're good to go with price. You can test drive it if you want, but they're going to give you a whole list of stuff that you could drive for that price, or just let them know, like I said, any make, any model, and you'll know exactly what you need to be paying for it. Very friendly people, rates as low as 2.9%, and multiple financing programs. You can do it online. Like I said, they have reps on the lower right-hand side of the website, and they'll answer any questions you have, or you can call them, 877-593-5797. It's 877-593-5797, or it's appleleasing.com.
So, did I hear correctly? Ian Boyd said, from what I'm hearing, the Texas offensive line may not have taken this game super seriously.
Yeah, I heard something like that. I mean, I don't know what Whoa. We can glean out of that or not.
Yeesh.
Does he but know, it's scary, yeah.
Does he know Casey Stuttered sometimes listens to our show? We can't.
Right,
we can't,
exactly.
We can't have stuff like that being said. Thanks to Ian for his time, as always. Big Three coming up. We will get you set for, well, we wish we could set you up for baseball tonight, but it's not happening. We'll set you up for the rest of the series, though, with the Astros and the Yankees. Plus, now we know who's in the World Series. More coming up. Plus, Cowboys fans, you'll want to be here at 6:05. We'll check in with Ben Rogers of 105.3 The Fan in Dallas, figure out what the heck's going on with the Cowboys as they're getting ready for the Eagles. This is The Horn.
Man.
Trey, you're making a hell of an argument today. The 1970s was Trey's pick for the best musical decade. He's throwing some 70s at us today. Bill Withers, correct?
Early 70s.
It's a great track. By the way, cool cover of this song, 94. 1984, I believe, was the year. Mick Jagger did a solo record called Wandering Spirit. One of my favorite like solo albums of a guy in a band I like ever. And Mick does it with Lenny Kravitz.
That's right. I've heard that version before. It's good. Pretty good.
It is good. It's a good one. It's not like, I mean, Bill's Bill. Bill Withers is Bill Withers, man. Such a great song.
But they're going back and forth on the vocals, Mick and Lenny.
Correct. Yeah, they throw it back and forth a little bit. Some good stuff, though, there. Trey throwing some 1970s music at us today. Speaking of music, we give you a chance to go see a little music, see Live and Bush with Our Lady of Peace at the HEB Center on October the 23rd. So that comes up a week from tonight, in fact. You can check that out. Go get more info and register for your chance to win tickets at hornfm.com. Also, we've got the Horn Mart for you with all the cool hats everybody is digging. Check that out. If you're into high school football, we've got our Thomas J. Henry All-Star Preps All-Syntex Player of the Week, as well as our Football Radio Network highlight reel, the ABC Home and Commercial Services High School Football Radio Network highlight reel, where you can help us to show off all the great performances around the Friday Night Lights. So go to hornfm.com for all of that. A lot of great things there for you on the website, including the Chad and Kevin page, where you can check out the podcasted hours you might have missed, interviews, podcasts, all kinds of good stuff
there. So much
there.
Easier to get around. I like it.
Yeah. The new website looks great. Thanks to Sean, our great new web guy, for helping make that even easier. All right, let's jump on into
Wisconsin guy.
Jump into the... Oh, and he's loving football right now,
he
too.
He loves his Wisconsin.
He does. Let's go Big Three here. I'll start with a stat on them.
The Big Three.
The Big Three is brought to you by Apple Leasing, where you only have to pay for the new half of the car or truck, the half under factory warranty. Any make, any model. Click appleleasing.com and see how easy it is.
Well, offensive line is small.
Their offensive line is definitely small. Yeah, no.
This year, maybe.
The only Power 5 team in the country that has not trailed for a snap.
Really?
The Wisconsin Badgers. They haven't trailed for a moment yet.
The Washington Nationals of college football.
That is right. The Nationals became the seventh team ever last night in a playoff series, a seven-game playoff series, to go wire to wire. Never trail.
That says a lot.
Impressive stuff. And tonight we will not get to see those two teams fight it out to see who gets to play the Nats. It is a rain out tonight for the Astros and the Yankees. So that sets up game four for tomorrow. They've already said it's going to be Greinke and Tanaka. Then game five is Friday. And as of now, that is Paxton going up against Verlander.
Verlander.
Yes, sir.
We've got bullpen on game six.
And bullpen game six all the way through on the schedule. The travel day will be, obviously it'll be after game five, but now there's no day off travel day. They've got to play game five, which is, again, an evening, a 6 o'clock start, especially if that one goes extras. You got to, everybody get on the plane, and you're playing Saturday evening.
Now, you said Verlander game five, Cole seven, right?
Yes, Verlander game five. And it hasn't been officially announced for game seven, but you would assume.
You would assume. Now, here's the question. Let's say the Astros are going into, because let's see, they're up 2-1 right now, so that could be 2-2. This could be 3-2 heading home.
Yes.
For game six.
Yes, absolutely. You're saying if you're up 3-2.
No, I'm saying if you're down 3-2, do you push up Cole for game six?
Now that's a question,
to
right?
get to game seven, and at that point, everyone.
That is...
Zeke, you got anything left?
That's going to be something to... Yeah, right. That's going to be something they're going to have to think about, possibly, if they get there. So we got a lot of good baseball that we're following, of course, with Washington getting in last night. You've got Texas and Kansas and the other college football going on. I'm sorry, Kansas fans, for calling you high school football. Didn't mean that.
They've looked like it before.
The other college matchups this weekend. If you're into, and it won't be a playoff thing, but if you're into who's going to end up in the Pac-12 championship game, this is a weekend that helps determine a lot of that, because you get Oregon at Washington on the northern side, and Arizona State, hello Herm, you play to win the game, Arizona State at Utah on the southern side of the Pac-12.
Yeah, and you get, I believe, you get four ranked teams in those two matchups.
Right, yeah, those are two of the ranked matchups of the week. And then, of course, Michigan and Penn State is the other one. As of this moment, the Pac-12 is getting left out of the playoffs. Something weird's going to have to happen for them to get in.
I agree.
Because they'd have to have not only one major conference either consume itself or have somebody lose, they would probably also have to have Notre Dame lose a big game somewhere.
Probably. Yeah, right? yeah, you're probably right about that. And Notre Dame is trailing Georgia right now as one-loss teams, and probably a couple other teams, and they should be.
Yeah, they need Georgia to fall. Right, there's just a combination of things they're going to need.
Oregon lost there. Oregon actually has a pretty good defense this year.
They've got
a couple of secondary guys. I will at some point print out the PFF. I'll probably try to do that tonight. PFF, Pro Football Focus, the college version.
Mm-hmm.
They came out with their midway All-American teams.
Oh, cool.
And that's more on numbers and analytics, so you can look at it. It's not... I'm sure some of these guys are right. The preseason one will still have, what's his name? I'm losing my mind. Walker Little.
Yeah.
Walker Little, mid-season All-American left tackle. He should have been on the preseason, and he shouldn't be on the mid-season because he's out for the year.
He's incredible. A couple quick NFL notes today, too. Dolphins are going back to Ryan Fitzpatrick. Titans are going with Ryan Tannehill at quarterback. And the big news of the day is Jalen Ramsey headed to the Rams. Brock Osweiler retired, and Joe Madden gets a new job. Madden is going to be the manager of the Angels. That mm-hmm. became official today. They're going to do a press conference later in the week.
Yeah, he is an angel. I mean, he'll always, for me, be a Cub because of what he was able to do, but he spent a majority, he was a bench coach there for
he was there with Socha all those years?
Ages. And before, I mean, I want to say Socha may have been the third manager. He was there for, he remembers Wally Joyner getting stabbed.
Oh, I got you. So,
he remembers Chili Davis when he was a leadoff guy weighing 185 pounds. That's how long Madden's been an angel.
I appreciate that we got to work in a Chili Davis.
Who's Chuck Finley's crazy Tawny Kitaen?
Tawny Kitaen.
He's got stories about Tawny.
So I know it's not his responsibility as a bench coach, but could Joe Madden not do anything for Mike Socha's attitude and overall just face?
Balanced it.
He balanced it.
Yeah, he balanced it.
He was still that angry?
No, I'm saying he balanced it. So you had Mike, it's why Brian Kelly has been easier to swallow, because he's got his boy.
Because Joe softened
Chip Long.
So Joe softened him up a little bit.
No, I'm saying they balanced each other out. You don't need everyone in the dugout to be, hey there guys, go ahead and get him. You had the tough ass in Socha,
right?
And you had the good cop in Madden.
And maybe when Madden left, that really is where it went crazy. Crazy mean for Socha, because it seemed like he got meaner by the second.
Yeah, I guess he kind of did. I don't know if there's I have no idea the correlation, but
I'm interested to see what happens with this. You mentioned it earlier too. It's not just the baseball part. This Tyler Skaggs investigation that's getting going right now adds this weird cloud over the Angels right now. They're trying to figure out what's going on here, where a former employee of this team.
I think he's still an employee.
Team, he's still there, saying that he not only gave Tyler Skaggs OxyContin, but they took it together. And then there are five other players from back in the day at some point. He is named to the investigation to say, oh, yeah, all those guys were on it too. And the team knew about it.
That's what he says. The team knew about it. And that's probably the biggest thing and he was getting them. It sounds like, you know, it sounds like Tyler was down. That stuff is so addictive and down a pretty tough path there. So it's rough. I'm not sure that we need to know this, but because of the whole story with the Angels, you can get it. You know, I mean, Skaggs' name is going to come out. The other names, sounds like this guy is, I don't know. He's in a weird spot too, obviously.
Yeah, absolutely. And then
I don't know how much guilt he has in reality, whether he was just trying to help someone out and felt like he needed to because he's part of the club, or if he was pushing stuff. And yeah. Either way, he was, what do they call it?
He's culpable. He was an accessory.
He's adding to it or helping out.
Oh, he's an enabler.
Enabler.
Yes, there
I can't
it is.
Think anymore.
He's an enabler. Yeah. I do think the toughest part is going to be, you can say that you think the team knew. How would you possibly prove that? Do you have some proof? That's the only thing, right? They're going to really need to be able
to prove
that.
You almost got to go Dave Bliss on that.
Oh, jeez.
Have the recorder in your pocket. Hold on. Say that again.
Hang on.
Towards my penis. Why are you standing up like that? Just say it again, louder, clearer. I got this at Radio Shack. What at Radio Shack? Oh, I'm blowing this thing.
Are you doing yoga over there? Why are you in that position?
I totally follow your point. Because obviously that guy came out right away if you saw the ESPN article and was like, no, he didn't.
Yeah, right.
We didn't talk about that 7 times. No, we didn't.
How in the world? I don't know how they're going to prove that, but that is a crazy story, and that is part of what Joe Maddon is walking into. Not to mention the fact that you got to go live in a division with the A's and what's that other team?
The Astros.
Oh, the Astros.
Right, yeah.
That's right. You got to go deal with them.
Yeah, and look, y'all look like it may not be as far away as we thought, right?
Yeah, that's true. That's true. The Rangers.
Y'all are in a weird spot. You guys. Because you're not rebuilding, but you're kind of rebuilding.
They're better than the Angels right now, right?
That's true.
Yeah.
Have y'all tried to sell Odor? He got that one little hot streak late.
People want us to clean the helmet, so it's weird.
I'm hoping they keep him, because that way I know who Trey's second baseman will be next year in fantasy.
Oh, that is rude. Why would you be so rude?
Ironically, me dropping him with a month to go turned into me losing to him. The guy who benefited from him having a hot week.
Oh, are you serious? That sucks. Yep. Trey's really good at fantasy, and he's got all these pickups, and he knows baseball. He's up on the personnel. But you could always tell, and I'm sure I know I have it too, where you've got one guy and you're sticking with him, you know? Like last year, mm-hmm. I stuck with Brandon Morrow just to see if he could actually get his pants on for like a month too long. I'm like, what are you doing, you know?
You just...
Fanboy.
You just loving on your guy.
Loving on your guy.
You're like Jerry Jones. Right. But too much love.
But if Odor was in Oakland, he's not picking him up.
Speaking of Jerry and those Cowboys, Ben Rogers of 105.3 The Fan in Dallas coming up at 6:05. Try to figure out what's going on with that team and what has sports radio been like in Dallas for the last 3 days. We'll find out from Ben coming up. Up next, we'll check voicemails if they're there, 337-3776. Then I've got a college football story for you and a couple of old schools for Kevin. Let's see, that's football, and one from baseball that he better not know, because that'd just be sick.
The Horns text line is brought to you by Specs. Specs wine, spirits, and finer foods. You're on the way, less to pay, everyday store. Cheers to savings. Chad's crap bag.
Crap bag. If you need an easy way to remember it, just think of a bag of crap.
All right, crap bag time. Let's check the voicemails, 337-3776. Trey, any voicemails now that you've cleaned some things out and straightened some stuff out? People care at all today? Or are they just rolling through a Wednesday pissed about the OU game?
Yeah, we have, let's say, 2 voicemails.
All right, 2 voicemails. Here we go. Voicemail number 1.
Hey, Chad. Hey, Kevin. It's Sooner Dave here. It's 5:04, and CeeDee Lamb just broke 3 more tackles and scored. Boomer Sooner, boys.
Dave.
You should have cleaned that one up. Please clean that one off. We didn't need to hear that.
There's not really much we can say to that. No. He was by far the best football player on the field, and Gallimore may have been number 2.
Yeah, you might be right. Voicemail number 2. Here it is.
Yeah, KD, let me put your mind at ease about Todd Orlando. Yes, he's worth every penny. Problem you have, 4 returning starters, and you're asking for intensity and tackling. He was shorthanded, and now you've got players that can't make it through the whole season. And where is this armor that they were working on through conditioning and strength? I got to tell you, we need more players.
More players.
But some of it to a scheme when you've got cornerbacks that are set up to come 20 yards to come launch like a missile, which also can be taught and then untaught. And somehow they're all getting shoulder injuries. Some of that is – it's not all that. Mm-hmm. And some of it's just bad luck and guys that are really physical football players. But I think some of that goes into it. Look, I'm not selling on Todd Orlando. I'm not Scipio yet. And – I'll give Paul a spanking at some point on that, but he's been down in Orlando pretty much all year, and it goes back a little bit to last year. I thought Orlando did a nice job finally at some point. It took a long time of adjusting to his talent. I'm hoping he can do that and has enough talent this year.
If you could spank him on the podcast, Brad says he can throw a not safe for work on that.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah,
I would.
That'd be good. Be good. All right, real quick.
You like this new Rams reporter, Lindsay Theory?
I do.
I do, too.
Yeah, does good work.
And I like her. Yeah, she does good work. Yep. And yeah,
I'm, not hard to look at.
I'm in.
Yeah, yeah, just yeah, she's good. All right, so last night, first off, 30 for 30, Chuck and Tito, the UFC thing was great. It was awesome. If you love UFC, definitely check it out. Also, the Saturdays in the South, history of SEC football. They went over the 2000 decade, so you got to see a lot of cool stuff, Kevin, including a flat-out genius going to South Carolina and resurrecting.
Great. Did he get any wins for y'all?
Great.
You're messing me up. Did you get any wins for them?
Did I get any wins? Like, did A&M beat South Carolina?
Did Holtz. Stay in character, damn it.
I'm so sorry. I'm just saying. Of course they won. What do you mean did they win? Of course they won.
I don't remember a bunch.
Of course there were games. No, there's a great story that Lou tells.
The Phil Petty story I told you is great.
Lou tells a story about a team meeting that turned everything around. They went 0-11 in his first year, and he tells the story of the team meeting that turned it around, and he said, next season's second best turnaround in the history of college football.
All right.
It was awesome. Oh, it's awesome.
Okay,
But here's the other story. So everybody remembers Tim Tebow in Florida, the 08 season when he's the main quarterback and they win the title, right?
Yep.
He gives the speech, they lose to Ole Miss, and they go and win the title. But they beat Bama in the SEC title on the way. And I'd forgotten that Bama was undefeated in 08. So that was a Nick Saban undefeated 12-0 team. They beat Bama, and they beat him pretty bad that day. And apparently Nick Saban just started fuming that day, and it really drove him crazy. So they go off and win.
That's surprising. I thought he would have had a good dinner. And you know what? We'll get to this when we get to it.
I was shocked.
I've got a good family and a really good life. What's the overview here?
Shocked.
Yeah.
Shocked. So then, they're interviewing Greg McElroy, who ends up being the quarterback for Bama in 09. He says that during that offseason, that's all you heard about, right? All the talk was about Florida, and there was the discussions. It was always about Florida. It was about Urban. It was about Tebow. Even though they weren't on the schedule. Right, it was just going to be in Atlanta. So they go 12-0. Florida goes 12-0. And McElroy says they get ready for the game. He puts on the tape of Florida's team from 09. And he says, oh, my God, I look at it and I realize this is the defense that we've been playing against ever since summer practice. Saban in
what, like in practice?
Like in practice. Okay. Saban had them working against the Florida defensive scheme all the way back to all the way back to the summer. Worked it all the way through the season. So Greg McElroy felt like it was pretty natural for him. Also, Greg McElroy went to Bama.
Which a lot of that didn't look like on the field. So I mean, if Greg McElroy said something's natural on a football field, there's some coaching there.
Yeah, that's true. It was a big game for him because when Tebow didn't go to Bama, it opened a spot later for McElroy to go to Bama. So he took it as kind of a personal game. So, right. So they win the game.
Yeah, because it was a close call.
So they win the game, and then Nick Saban goes up to a teary-eyed, crying Tim Tebow and tells him, hey, I just want to let you know, we've been working on this all year long after what you did to us last year.
What an A-hole. That's great.
He told Tebow that on the field.
But you didn't. He also finished with Hail Satan, which was odd, but
unbelievable.
Really trying to dig in on him.
Unreal. Anyway, it's been a good series. So I guess one more episode to go where my Aggies will finally join the conference. The last episode.
Yeah, I wouldn't wait for, I guess you get Johnny.
Gonna barely get in.
We'll be Johnny in
gotta
there.
Gotta show some Johnny, right?
Gotta show some Johnny.
A little bit. All right, real quick, some old schools. Kevin, speaking of A&M, he used to be there. John Chavis, the Chief, is 63 years old today. Arkansas's defensive coordinator. But where'd he play college ball?
Wasn't he in Tennessee? He's a Tennessee guy.
Very good. Okay. Tennessee is correct for John Chavis.
DC there forever.
This one I think you might know. Cordell Stewart is 47 years old today. He threw a very famous long pass, kids, for what school?
Oh, man. That's one of the best college football games. Probably the best, of the best endings I've ever seen. Best Hail Mary we've ever seen in all of football. Colorado. A couple weeks later, came down to Austin, 34-31. Neil Voskarichian. John McAvitt gets knocked out by Tony Brakens. It's actually Brackens.
Was that in the Colorado game?
Yeah, it was Colorado game.
Okay.
Yep.
Wow, I'd forgotten that was a Colorado
Shea Morin's had a really good game. He was hitting Eric Jackson, Curtis Jackson. Shea got injured in that game, and then James Brown had to start the next week against OU.
There you
Your
go.
Your first Texas OU game.
Look at that. Stoney Clark,
that whole
full
thing
circle.
Coming around.
Life's a rich tapestry. Speaking of life's a rich tapestry, I mentioned earlier is the 27th birthday of Bryce Harper today. Please tell me you don't know the little bitty, itty bitty college that he went to before he went to the pros.
Southern Nevada Community College. It's a wood bat league. Or it's is it Northern or Southern? Southern Nevada?
Is that it? Wow!
Wood bat league. I knew about him when I was doing play-by-play.
Can you give me the mascot, Craigway? Because that'd be really sick.
The Fubadoodlers. You got to look that up.
They are.
I have no idea what's the mascot.
They are the Coyotes.
Coyotes.
That is fantastic work. Yes, Southern Nevada. He was like 17.
Yeah.
When he went there.
He went early.
Went early. And you're right. They for their
the Woodbat League,
but only for conference. I think is what I read today.
Oh, really? Like, I didn't know that. That makes sense. That makes sense.
Yes, in conference play, they go to Woodbats, and that's one of the reasons he wanted to play there because he felt like it would give comparisons. By the way, he had horrible numbers there.
Yeah, just I can only imagine. Terrible. I bet he was crushing it.
Here's the other part I like. They play in the SWAC conference around these parts. They think of SWAC as something else. Out there, it's the Scenic West Athletic Conference.
Scenic West?
How about that?
The western part of the country can only take sports so seriously
yes.
compared to like the southeast, you know? And
Scenic West.
It says a lot about them. It really does. They've got more to do and more
good
things
and
going.
Bad,
yeah.
But mainly good.
More good.
More good.
More good.
Being people. Yeah, being normal folk.
I really think the Pac-12 should do that. It just doesn't mean as much because we have more.
Because we got stuff to do. The Pac-12. Look, we got stuff to do.
Right.
That's the tag.
Pac-12. We're more developed. Other stuff to do.
All right, coming up, we'll see if the Cowboys have something to do against the Eagles. Ben Rogers of 105.3 The Fan coming up to give us the very latest, the injury stuff on the offensive line. Is Amari Cooper going to play? What they're hearing in Dallas coming up on the Horn.